This is Morgan Michael, welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness, together by challenging our assumptions and venturing beyond the status quo in education. We can make a big impact, one small act at a time.
I think my main message I want everyone to know is that when you see extraordinary things being done, just know they can be done by ordinary people, probably people just like you, people just like me.
Have you ever dreamt of doing extraordinary things with your life but haven't known where to start? Amy Perkins, an educator and teacher coach turned entrepreneur and influencer, walked away from a 25-year career with an overwhelming sense of imposter syndrome and turned around to embrace her true purpose by unlocking the keys to courage. In this interview, she shares her specific 3-step process for manifesting your dreams through a process in which she has been able to get one-on-one coaching with the Mel Robbins, get one-on-one FaceTime for her daughter with a world-famous actor, get to know Seth Godin, helped her husband become the leading salesperson in his division, win international trips across the world, and change lives internationally. Amy shares Mel Robbins' 5-second rule that helped her to reclaim her life. She discusses tuning into the whispers that lead you closer to your purpose, how to create family affirmations, how to walk the talk when it comes to believing in yourself. She also explores some of the pitfalls of education and how to overcome the failures of ineffective leaders by speaking truth to power. You will come away inspired with the belief that you too can lead an extraordinary life. Follow her at Amy Perkins on LinkedIn or check her out at Keys to Courage on Instagram and online at www.keystocourage.com. Hope you enjoy. I am so excited to interview you, Amy, because I just think your story is so incredible. And then I think that you are doing some really big stuff in terms of inspiring other people and the slow drip approach to, well, actually, you've got quite the following. It's not that slow. I'm sure it started out slow drip, but it's not that slow. So I'm inspired by you, Amy Perkins, and I'm so thrilled that you're on Kindsight 101. And thank you for being on this interview with me.
Oh, thank you. And of course, we connected through Seth Godin because he is just, you know, there's a lot of thought leaders out there and authors, and a lot of them don't live their lives like the work they put out. And Seth is one of those that does. And if anything, I think behind the scenes, he might even be more amazing than his work even portrays.
Absolutely. Totally agree. And yes, we met on the Podcast Fellowship, which is an online course really designed to teach people how to podcast, but really it's about connecting with others to make really great work. And so I felt so fortunate to cross paths with you because I've seen you as just an absolute inspiration to other people. And dive right into your story because I think you've got such an incredible story and so many facets. When I listen to your podcast, I'm blown away with each episode at how many amazing things have happened to you or the things that you've manifested. So if you were to introduce yourself to folks, how would you do so given your diverse background and projects?
I am just an average middle-aged mom and wife that is doing extraordinary things. And I think that is why I am so passionate about sharing what I'm doing, because I want everybody to know everybody can do extraordinary things. There's nothing special about me. I'm just taking action and I've just pushed through the fear. And if you do those things, you can really do anything.
And you haven't always been this outspoken, courageous, and determined person that you are now. Can you talk about your friend Tracy and the moment that you really awoke to your blessings in your life and essentially changed the trajectory of that life?
Yeah. So in 2016, my best friend from college, she passed away. She had ovarian cancer and she was a mom to this beautiful 2-year-old baby boy. And she was a single mom. And when she was sick, is really when I started to wake up to how many blessings in my life that I had to be grateful for. And that's when everything started changing for me. I stopped complaining. I realized I became really self-aware of how many mundane things I complained about and how fortunate I really was. When my husband and I would have an argument, immediately I would switch to, oh my gosh, Tracy would give anything to have a husband to argue with right now. Mm. Here she was, a single mom with a baby, driving herself to chemo. Her sickness woke me up, and then her death like broke me wide open.
My understanding is that at her, or I don't know if it was driving back from her service or on your way to her service when she had passed, something just hit you. Like you were talking about the fact that you were living a life that maybe was in contradiction to your passion or who you truly were. And your friend made a suggestion that essentially changed your life. Can you talk about that book?
That was Stephanie. Yes. And again, everything in my life, it's all divinely guided. Now I look back and I see all of the dots and how they're connected. And Stephanie and Tracy and I were all in the same sorority in college. And so Stephanie knew the love that I had for Tracy, and she knew the whole story. And Stephanie and I had lost touch after college. We're driving home from a college reunion and Tracy had just passed. And Stephanie reached out to me after she saw that Tracy passed and said, Amy, I know how much you loved her and this has got to be so hard. And so because of Tracy's passing, Stephanie and I reconnected, which was just a blessing. And we both said that we knew Tracy did that. You know, she did that for us. And Stephanie said, I read this book. I think you'd really like it. It's called The 5-Second Rule by Mel Robbins. And I read that book, and it was that peace that I needed to get out of my way. It was that peace that taught me how to push through fear and how to do that multiple times a day. And that little 5-second rule, and what that is, if you haven't heard of Mel Robbins, her TED Talk has, I think, 18 million views. She's got her best-selling book, The 5-Second Rule. She has a national show, a syndicated talk show launching this fall. And I read that book and I internalized that rule. And what she talks about is when we have the idea to do something, whether it be walking up to somebody across a crowded room, making a phone call, sending an email, speaking a dream out loud, we have 5 seconds to do that thing and push through that uncomfortable feeling, or we don't do it. And I realized, wow, I hold myself back all of the time. And with this 5-second rule, where you count backwards in your head, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then you move, you take action on that thought. I use that rule multiple times a day, day after day, pushing through fear, and I change my life. And here's the thing, anybody can read that book, but if you don't take action on it, you're going to stay stuck.
I think that's so wonderful, that whole idea of if you have the desire, if it stays latent, then nothing really happens. You don't have that forward momentum, but it's all about really taking the action to create the life that you want to lead. So you have really taken life by the horns, and you have created opportunities for yourself that are some of people's biggest dreams. You have basically taken massive action to create the life that you want. I know that back when you were, I think you wanted to establish a business and you were looking around for mentors and people who were doing it right. And you were really inspired by your child's pediatric dentist, Joelle Speed. Is that how you say her name?
Dr. Speed. Yeah, Joelle Speed.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about your first meeting and how your advice that you learned from Mel Robbins kind of jump-started you into that relationship with her?
Absolutely. I was really... this woman just stuck in fear, held me back from now. I see what an amazing life I could have been living all along, but I'm just grateful that I found this rule and I realized all this now. But I wanted to reach out to my kid's pediatric dentist and ask her about building a team because I was starting a children's fitness program that I was going to be bringing into schools. And I knew that it was going to grow and I was going to need to be hiring other people. And how do you go about getting the right people? I was nervous to reach out to her. And if I look back, why was I nervous? I think why a lot of people are nervous and why we don't reach out to people, why we don't do things. I was nervous that she would say no. I was scared of rejection. I was scared of what if she says no and then I have to go to the dentist and I have to see her. How embarrassing. You know, that's my thought process back then. Bless my husband's heart. He said, just send her a message on Facebook. You're not asking for the moon. You're asking, you want to ask her very specific questions about how she found what she used when she was hiring a team, what she looked for, how she got this fabulous team. Ask her for a 5-minute phone call. The worst she can say is no. Use your 5-second rule. And I did. So I reached out to her on Facebook. I was really nervous, like butterflies in my stomach, nervous about rejection. Now I know that any rejection, any no, all it is the universe saying, oh, there's another path. It's not the end of the world. And I did. I reached out to her and she got right back to me and said, hey, you know, why don't we meet for coffee? You know, I'm happy to meet for coffee. So we did. We met for coffee and I had a list of questions. And I think this is, you know, an important part. When you want to pick someone's brain, someone that's busy, like a doctor, a business owner, don't just say, can we meet? I want to talk to you. I mean, I get that all the time now. People just want to get on a phone call without any direction of what that is. But I think because I was so specific and I said, I admire your business that you've built. I admire the model. I love this fabulous team of women that you have. If you could give me 5 minutes of your time so that I could see how you found those people and how you found the right people, I would be so appreciative. So I was really specific in my ask. It wasn't going into this blind ask. And because of that, I think that's part of why she said yes.
Yeah.
So we went to coffee and we started talking and she wanted to know about my business and what was this dream I had. And our 5-minute conversation turned into 3 hours. And at the end of our conversation, you know, she grabbed this necklace around her neck. It was a key. And she asked if I had heard of the Giving Keys. And I hadn't. And she explained it was this company that hired people that were transitioning out of homelessness to engrave words on keys. And the word on her necklace was believe. And she wanted to gift that to me because when you're done with your word, you pass it on to someone that needs it more than you do. And it was this moment. We both had goosebumps and tears in our eyes and we knew that it was something so much bigger. And she gave me this necklace that said believe. And she said, I believe in you.
Powerful, powerful words.
And yeah, and she just said, go forward with this business and believe in yourself. It's the magic of the desire and the belief and the action.
That's so good. The desire plus the belief plus the action that really enables you to step into the life that you imagine for yourself. And I just think that the key though is like an anchor, right? It reminds you daily, moment to moment, of what your purpose is, if you are someone who's tuned into that, right?
Oh my gosh. I looked at it like my genie magic lamp. I mean, I held it, I rubbed it. I would go into any meeting starting that business. Like, I believe, she believes in me, I believe. And I did, I started a successful, profitable business.
Yes. And can you talk a little bit about Keys to Courage? And because I mean, You started the fitness business, but that kind of launched you into this Keys to Courage business, the speaking and all of the blogging, your podcast and the inspirational coaching that you do for people. And then, of course, you have courses as well. Can you speak to what that program is and what inspired you to start it?
Yeah. So the business I was starting when I met with Dr. Speed was a fitness program for kids. That was what I was starting. And, you know, that process of doing that and getting uncomfortable and speaking my dream out loud. And I needed to partner with the best of the best in fitness. And that was a Reebok sponsored athlete, a local woman that owned her own fitness business, and reaching out to her and, you know, being so scared that I wanted to puke in my car before I went up to ask her all of those things. I had that key and I pushed through fear through that whole year of doing that business. But I got to a point where I realized this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's time to pivot. And it's okay. But that year of getting uncomfortable, of doing the scary things, of using that 5-second rule time after time after time, that whole thing was a massive life lesson for me. I thought, how can I share this with people beyond just people in my sphere? I can make some videos. I can start a blog. I can share what I've learned with other people. And there was zero idea of doing this for money. It was just, I know that there's one person out there like me that just doesn't know this information. Because I had just talked to everybody in my life and everybody in their life. And I mean, everybody within a 10-mile radius of me knew about these keys, about Mel Robbins, about her 5-second rule book. And, you know, we don't need permission anymore to share our message with a bigger audience. And while I was scared to death, I thought, okay, I could make a video and upload it to YouTube and share about this 5-second rule that really transformed my life, that shot me on that trajectory to push through fear and start doing pretty incredible things. With the help of my 9-year-old son, he uploaded that video to YouTube. And that was really the first piece of content that I ever put out about a way for me to share something that I'd learned. The crazy thing, and like I said, everything in my life I feel has been divinely guided. My son helped me upload that video. It started getting views. My first video on YouTube, I think it has over 20,000 views. My content on LinkedIn now gets tens of thousands of views. But at the time, again, just being an ordinary woman, sharing a tip that I learned, I thought, okay, maybe there's something to this. Maybe I could keep sharing these things I've learned. And so I kept uploading videos. And then I thought, maybe I could start a blog. And with the help, because I can't do it on my own, I am totally tech challenged. But if I can do these things, anybody can. And that's, you know, a really significant part of my message. Like, you don't have to know how to do these things to be able to share a message.
Yes, I love that message that you say. You say you can just start. You don't have to know what it's going to look like on the other side or even exactly how to do it, but just have the desire and get started and figure it out along the way, right?
And that's what I've done. And so now I have a YouTube channel. I have a blog. I have a website. I have an Instagram account. I have a newsletter that goes out to almost 1,000 people. And I don't even have a freebie that I give away. That's all the advice of all the gurus, is give away a freebie to get people to sign up. I just say, if you want to learn how to annihilate self-doubt, how to push through fear, how to design your dream life, sign up for my newsletter. I will share tips and tools week after week. That is my promise. That's it.
Do you know what I love about that too, is I just think that because it came from a place of altruism and money making was not the primary focus, you were actually adding value to people's lives because you wanted to, not because you had some ulterior motive. And I think when you are able to look at the skills and gifts that you have and then want to spread them out and have those ideas spread throughout the world, I think it can happen really organically if you are truly genuine about it, right?
And I think that's the key. And I had people when I was starting my blog, like neighbors, what are you doing? Like, how are you getting paid? I said, I'm not.
Yes.
And well, how are you going to make money? I said, I don't know. I don't care. I just had this burning desire to share what I had learned and share these little snippet stories of this is what can happen if you do this thing. You can do it too.
I think it's so inspirational. I want to back up a little bit. You have an education background. You had an education career for 25 years, and you actually walked away from all of that. Can you talk a little bit about, first of all, what made you want to be a teacher and then a teacher coach, someone who helps student teachers and beginning teachers develop their practice and develop their confidence? And then we'll talk a little bit about the turning point.
Yeah. So I think, like anybody in education, I felt like I won the lottery in life because teaching was in my soul. And I remember my first day of teaching and just thinking, I am getting paid to do this. I mean, it was like I couldn't even believe it because I loved it that much. I loved Mondays, and I had friends all around me making two, three, four times what I was making. You know, I started teaching 25 years ago. I was making, I think, $21,000 my first year. And I was the happiest one of anybody that I knew. And I wouldn't have traded their salary for a job where all they did was live for the weekends.
Right.
And so I felt so blessed. And I ended up being really good at what I did and was sought out by the assistant superintendent to start training other people. And so really early in my career, like maybe 23, I was training, doing workshops, training entire school districts, training grade level teachers on what I was doing. And at that time, I was teaching kindergarten, and I had this process where I had these five-year-olds writing paragraphs, months into school.
Wow.
And just doing some amazing things. Mm-hmm. I was differentiating without even knowing what that word was, having kids in different groups. It was just intrinsically in a thing that I saw, like, whoa, well, these kids aren't all at the same level, so they must be in groups. And I just, you know, had five math groups and five reading groups. And if I had a kid where their reading was way above what I was teaching in any of my groups, I found the gate teacher and I said, hey, the fifth grade gate teacher, this little girl needs to come write for the school newspaper. I mean, it was just, that was my mind. Like, I was always an outside of the box thinker.
Hmm.
And I loved it. And the interesting thing is, in education, that wasn't always celebrated.
Yes.
I had a lot of people like, what are you doing? You can't do this. And in my mind, it was like, why not? Why can't I send this five-year-old to write for the school newspaper? Because she can. Why not send her to the science class? Because that's her level. But I did. I had these people all along my journey saying, you can't do that. Hmm. I did it anyway, because it just made sense to me. But if I look back, there were those whispers that I really didn't fit in to what the mold of education was. I made people uncomfortable. I had a teacher one time come in and say, I had a 2-3 combo, and I was teaching my second graders multiplication and division because they could learn it. My Yes. belief was always, for kids, you can do anything. For myself, it wasn't. And that's also like interesting looking back on that, because my motto to the kids was, believe in yourself, you can do anything. But I didn't believe that for myself.
That is so profound, because I think teachers often don't practice what they preach. It's such an important point.
I didn't. Now I see it. But it was, again, I look back now like a little breadcrumb. I think like from God being like, Amy, you did this for everybody else. And even my friends, like I've always believed in other people, but I didn't have that till now. Mm. Now I do. And I had a teacher come in and say, is it true that you're teaching your second graders these? And I'm like, yeah, it's awesome. And she said, you can't do that. You need to stop. That wasn't where I was meant to be, because these people just wanted me to stop being me. Yes. I was just being me. And so anyhow, I taught for 9 years, loved every second of it. The only reason I stopped teaching is because I had my daughter, and I knew the love and the joy in my soul that I poured into teaching, I couldn't do that with my own kids. I was that teacher. I taught in a Title I school with a lot of underprivileged kids. I had kids whose parents were in prison, kids whose parents were addicts, kids who were put into foster care. And I had parents ask me, you know, can you take my kid home on the weekend? Like, I can't care for them this weekend. And principal okayed it. So I had a little girl that I would take home once a month on the weekends, and I would take her shopping and get her food and buy her clothes and made her a little bed on the couch. And, you know, she thought my apartment was like the Taj Mahal. That was that maternal, you know, part of me. And because I did those things, I just knew. Like, I couldn't teach how I taught for 9 years being a mom. And so that was that whisper too. And so what I did, because I was already consulting and coaching while I was teaching, I also had started my own tutoring business.
And there was a point at which, because you were coaching new teachers, you were encouraging them to step into their own integrity, to be outside of the box and to do wonderful things. And sometimes your philosophy didn't always line up with maybe a more industrial model of education or some of those administrators that maybe see things from only a particular perspective, right?
Yeah. And again, I'm going to come back to everything being divinely guided, because
it turns out that the student that Amy was mentoring had actually been her kindergarten student 20 years prior.
And here I am, her coach, and she was an incredible teacher. She's that teacher that as moms, we all want our kids to have. She's that teacher that we all, the great teachers, want to surround ourselves with. She was an outside of the box thinker. She was also teaching in a Title I school and had these underprivileged kids in her class. And so she started an after school program where she would do these girls' hair for dances, for sports, for free. She had a kindness box in the back of the room. And when she saw kids doing things kind, she encouraged them to write that down if they spotted someone doing something kind, to put in the box. And then she would give them shout outs. She's a middle school teacher. That's not the norm. And as a coach, I worked closely with the new teachers that I was coaching with their admin, and we would do a triad. And our first meeting with him, I got a weird feeling. You know, one of the things was, as a coach, part of my job was to encourage and find those superstar teachers for those new teachers to go observe. One of the powerful things about being in it for 25 years is I knew those superstar teachers all over the county. So I'm in that new meeting with the VP and my teacher, and I said, you know, part of our program is they get release days, they get to go observe superstar teachers, and I have the perfect woman for her to go observe. And this man, he's like, nope, we have great teachers here. She can observe my wife.
Oh my, oh dear.
And that gave me a weird feeling, because normally all of the administrators, they were always just thrilled that I had these resources at my fingertips. What ended up really happening was he was saying things to her like, you're a rookie, you need to act like one.
Wow.
You talk too loud in meetings. You don't smile enough. He was lying on her observations. He was rating her the lowest score possible when it just wasn't true. Again, I thought, okay, this is weird. But none of my peers, when I would tell them these stories, they were just like, oh, that's just how it is. And I'm thinking like, no, it's not how it is. That's not how it is. My husband works with a Fortune 250 company and in the corporate world. And I would come home and tell him some of these stories. And he would say, you know, that's a hostile work environment. You're a rookie, act like it. You don't smile enough, especially a man to a woman.
Yeah.
That's not okay. So the bummer was I couldn't meet with him and tell him these things because he could fire her for whatever reason.
Right. And you were also, weren't you handcuffed by your superior as well? Like you were trying to speak truth to power and you said, please, can I go and have a conversation with him? And didn't your female supervisor say, no, it's not happening?
Well, yeah, the first time I reached out, my advice was to have my teacher quit and find another job. And she loved her students. She loved the team. It was the middle school that she went to. Like, she loved everything except this one person. And as I'm sure you've got listeners that are in education, as we all know, that one toxic person can lead, just spread poison throughout an entire school. And she loved everything except for him. So I didn't like that advice about having her go quit. I mean, it was 2018. We're telling women, because you have a toxic man in the leadership position, like it's our job to go quit and find something else. I don't like that. I don't think that's okay. And that was really, I think, when I broke.
Like my question to you too, and you stepped away from the career, but my question to you is, what do you say to anyone? I mean, it can be a woman or a man. It can be a gender issue for sure. There's an added sort of power dynamic that comes with that. What do you say to somebody who's in a hostile work environment and they don't like what they see and it's not lining up with their values? How do you navigate that situation?
You need to speak up, and you need to speak up to other people, and you need other people to speak up. You need to speak up. You need to get your colleagues to speak up. My teacher wasn't tenured. She ended up getting let go. But there are a lot of teachers, there are a lot of people that do have a secure job that just aren't speaking up, and they see things going on. Just because it's uncomfortable, it's not okay to see things going on, like really crappy leaders, and just staying silent because you're part of the problem. I thought, if my daughter, who's 16, is at work and nobody is standing up and saying, this is wrong, I would be sick. Mm-hmm. And I needed to stand up and say, this is wrong. This is wrong. And so I quit.
Wow. So tell me about what that felt like, because you, my understanding is you didn't really have an exit strategy or a game plan. I mean, you basically launched yourself into a world of uncertainty.
Yeah. Well, I had been doing a year of intense work, you know, after Tracy died, to this point where I quit. The old me, I wouldn't have quit. I would have just done what most people do. You just go through the motions. I was okay quitting, not knowing what was next. Now, the caveat is we are a two-income family, and we're different than most people. We always have lived below our means. And I know there are people that are not in that situation. I know there are single moms that are probably in toxic work job environments, and they don't have that choice that I had. So I just want to be really clear. I was able to quit, and I didn't have to replace my salary right away.
That's important for sure, because what you're not advocating is that everyone go out and quit their job when they're unhappy.
No, not at all. Yeah. No, but start taking steps. Everybody that's not happy, you absolutely can start taking steps. So for me, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I did know that I wanted to get coaching, and I did read that 5-second rule book and immediately think, I need to meet this woman, Mel Robbins. I wrote it down. I'm going to meet Mel Robbins. I didn't know how. I didn't even really know what she did beyond write this book. So I Googled her. And come to find out, she did used to coach one-on-one. She was also a contributor on CNN. Ironically enough, right after I read her book, I was listening to her on a podcast, on the School of Greatness podcast with Lewis House. And I'm telling you, Morgan, it couldn't have been a week after Stephanie and I were together and she recommended that book to me, that she is on Lewis Howe's podcast talking about an upcoming course that she had called The Power of You. I was like, I've got to take this course. So I signed up for that course. But crazier than that, she was going to be at Creative Live, which is Chase Jarvis's. I don't know. Do you know Creative Live?
I do, but maybe give a little rundown just for any listeners who aren't aware of what it is.
And again, I had never heard of this. Creative Live is a platform. It's an educational platform, and you can learn anything. At the time, I think they started, it was really based around photography. Mm-hmm. Now they've got all kinds of thought leaders on there. And Mel Robbins was going to be a guest. And what they do is they record a full day with a live audience, and Mel Robbins was going to be doing coaching. And then they wrap it up and sell it as something that you can purchase. So someone reached out to me and said, hey, I know you love Mel Robbins. She's going to be in San Francisco, which is an hour and a half from where I live. you should see if you could go to be in Creative Live on the audience. So immediately I applied. My husband was camping and I'm like, you need to find Wi-Fi and apply. I had no idea, really. I didn't know the magnitude of the power of this platform, Creative Live. And I didn't realize how limited the seating was. I thought maybe it could be like 1,000 people.
Right.
So I get picked and my husband gets picked. We both got picked.
That's crazy.
It's crazy because they only picked 35 people.
Yeah, that is crazy.
And I think at the time, the demand for that exact session was more than they had had for any session ever. We show up there and I am sitting there. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to get one-on-one coaching from her. At the first segment where they took a break, Mel Robbins says, I want her mic'd up. And she points to me in the audience. She had never talked to me in person ever. And so that next segment, I was on stage getting one-on-one coaching by Mel Robbins. And it was live streamed worldwide.
Oh my gosh. And I think about this, and what's really, really amazing is the way that you set your intentions. So you write things down that you hope and dream about, yep. And then you find the micro steps that it takes to get there. And then you've had a lot of moments like this in your life where you've basically put action behind these really lofty goals and they've actually happened. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yes. And so it's this formula, right? And it's not, I'm not the person that made it up, but for me, the formula that works is anybody. It works for anybody. If you have an intense desire for something, and that is key, you can't just kind of want to sort of hope, like an intense desire in your soul, and you believe that it is possible and you take action. And for me, what that looks like is writing it down. And I actually created a course around this. It's called Design Your Dream Life, because I did this for my career. I did it for friendships. I did it for my marriage. And I did it for the relationship with my kids.
Yes.
I got really specific in all those five areas of my life and did these steps. And I am living this life that I wrote down 2 years ago that I wanted to live. And I've had people buy my course and say, that next day after I did what your course said, like I manifested my dream client. I'm like, I know. Like it works. It works for the right people.
I remember seeing a little post of you with your husband and he was like, all right, fine, I'll do the steps. And he did it. And then sure enough, it worked.
Oh my gosh, yes. And my husband, we're not the same person at all. And he's just watched me on this journey. You can't make someone do this journey.
No,
you can't. But he and my kids, the biggest gift. And as a teacher, you know, like when you walk the talk, people will learn. You can't talk it. You can't tell them. They're learning at their own pace. But yeah, we all sat down. We did family affirmations. This was a different thing. And I said, we're all going to write our affirmations down. And then we're going to sing them. And my family, they think I'm crazy, but you know, it's family. Like you just do these crazy things together. And my husband's was my ideal clients. He works with doctors. My doctors will seek me out and call me to work with them. And in what he does, he's a sales rep for dental equipment and dental supplies. And you are out making cold calls. You're out trying to get referrals. People aren't just picking up the phone and calling you. It's just not how it works.
Yes.
So his was like a really lofty affirmation. I am not making this up. Well, you saw him on video.
Yes.
That next morning, he goes, Amy. I go, what? He's like, read this text. And it was an administrative assistant that said, Dr. So-and-so asked me to reach out because we'd like you to work with our other office.
Oh my gosh. Which is just, I just love that story because I think it's like that confirmation that when you actually really put your mind behind something and you take all those steps that some pretty great things can happen.
Yes. It's just amazing and miraculous. And then as our kids are seeing this, I just think what a gift that they're seeing and learning all of this at their ages, because I didn't know it was possible till I was 45.
you have not always been such a confident, out-of-the-box kind of person. And my understanding is that when you were going through elementary school and into middle school and high school, you were a really by-the-book, exceptional student who worked really, really hard. And when I think about you, it's not necessarily that you were off the charts, genius level, IQ, whatever, but your grit and your perseverance and your effort was unbelievably high. And yet, you came away from that school experience with a sense of imposter syndrome and a feeling of being not enough. And I can really identify with that, that perfectionism met with negative leadership or teachers. Can you speak to that? And then how you have changed? Like, what is it that has changed in terms of your philosophy?
I stopped listening to the outside noise. The outside noise was, you're not smart enough. Because my grades weren't the highest, or I didn't qualify for that accelerated class. And I think this is where education hurts so many children. I hear it in conversations when I'm doing carpool with my teenager, and these kids are killing themselves for trying to reach an unattainable goal. It's unattainable. The last week, a little girl was in the car and she's like, I have a 4.1 and I know I'm not going to be able to get into the college I want to get into. And I'm not smart enough. And that breaks my heart wide open. Mm. And there are some phenomenal teachers out there flipping the script on these conversations and letting kids know that you're more than your scores and you're more than your grades. But for those ultra achiever people that are just trying to do everything right, like I was as a kid, being rejected from schools when you've got a 4.1 and feeling like I'm not good enough. I got a really low score on the SAT. I'm not a stupid person,
No. But
I felt really stupid. No. I mean, really stupid. So that was one of those, like, helped cement that imposter syndrome. I used to have nightmares that someone would show, this is recent, this is like in the last 5 years, only in the last 2 years did they go away. People would show up and say at work, oh, we made a mistake, you didn't actually graduate, you weren't smart enough.
Oh man, and it seems like when you've talked about where that came from, they took your effort and your grit and they basically, they meaning the school system and public school in California, I think, they basically put you into accelerated classes, skipped you forward, and then halfway through the year, I think this happened on maybe two or even three occasions, they pulled you out and put you back into the quote-unquote regular program. And I just thought, how can people do this to somebody? Like, it's just so wrong.
And it is so detrimental to a child's psyche. It's just a shame that that can still go on, and it does.
Yeah. And what do you wish, like, I think of any parents or even kids listening, like, what do you wish you could have said to your school age self about that experience?
So this is what I say to my kids. I'm telling you, I've shifted. So when my daughter was like second grade, first grade, I was still like, oh my gosh, you have to get the perfect everything. I was in that weird mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I wrote her an apology letter. I saw her starting to get anxiety as a little kid. She was chewing her sleeves on her clothes because of this crazy pressure. Because I unknowingly, parents, I don't think we do this on purpose, but it's like we look at our kids and they're a reflection of us. They're not us. They're not an extension of us. Now I tell my kids, you do your best. Your best is enough for me. If your best is a C, that is good enough for me. But if you're not trying and I see zero effort and you're getting a B, I'm not happy. But if you're giving it your all and I'm seeing you trying and you're showing up, I don't care what your grades are. I don't care what your scores are. You're enough. And more than your grades and your scores, like, are you kind?
Mm.
How do you treat other people? One time, my son had a mom approach me at school, and she asked if I was Caden's mom. And when we get those questions, we're kind of like, I don't know. What do I answer? Yes or no? Is this, what are you going to ask me? And she went on to tell me that her son was autistic and had never had a friend at school, and that my son in first grade had befriended him, it was the biggest gift that she, as a mom, and she was crying, and then I started crying. I had no idea. Like, I didn't go out and say, befriend the special needs kids. And it, this little autistic boy ended up being my son's best friend. Those are the things that matter. And I just instill in my kids by praising them for those things that I know when they get those scores that aren't perfect and those grades that aren't perfect, it's not going to crush them like it crushed me.
Before we move on to the three rapid fire questions, is there anything that you want to add to the conversation that you haven't had a chance to touch on?
I think my main message I want everyone to know is that when you see extraordinary things being done, just know they can be done by ordinary people, probably people just like you, people just like me. I have zero tech background. I have launched a YouTube channel. I have launched a podcast. I have launched a newsletter. I am doing things that 2 years ago, I would have told myself, I can't do those things. You can learn anything. It's just a mindset shift. You can learn anything.
And where can people find you online and otherwise?
My website is keystocourage.com. I'm also on Instagram at keystocourage and on LinkedIn, which is my favorite social media platform because you can connect with some amazing people from all over the world, is under Amy Perkins.
What does kindness mean to you?
It's giving kindness to others without an expectation. Just being kind because it's in your soul, not because you want something back.
What one superpower does an educator need to lead with in order to be effective?
A belief in themselves.
What one quote would you print on one of those quote cups that could be sold in big bookstores around the world?
Anything is possible if you believe it to be true.
Fantastic. Amy Perkins, thank you so, so much for joining me today on Kindsight 101. It's been an absolute joy.
Thank you so much.
I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes and leave a review. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag #SmallActBigImpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.